Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello there, welcome to a brand new Arseblog Arsecast right here on arseblog.com. Hope you're well. After what has been a relatively quiet week, it's been all chilled out. You know, you reach the FA Cup final and everyone's all relaxed. We've done this. This is what's going on. This is our lives now, people. It's like Arsenal game win, nothing. Arsenal game win, nothing. Not that I'm looking or seeking for variety in any way, particularly not this weekend, given the opposition, given the fact, obviously, that we're playing Chelsea, and they're cunts, as we know. We have, from time to time, touched on this subject on this podcast about what absolute cunts they are. And, of course, Chelsea are managed by Jose Mourinho, who happens to be probably in the top four biggest cunts of all time. No question. Like, no doubt about it. Go back through history, through humanity, the people who've done terrible things, awful things, unforgivable things, and he's right up there with all of them. Like, I'm not going to try and categorize, I'm not going to say which three, because it's very subjective, isn't it? Who are the three people in history that are worse than Jose Mourinho? It changes from day to day. It's like somebody saying to you, what is your favourite song? And it all really depends on your mood, doesn't it? One day it could be something upbeat and rocky, and the next day it could be something more mellow and tranquil. Something that touches you to your soul because of something that happened, maybe some heartbreak, and then you're listening to a sad song, and that's your favourite song, and then you're all better again, and it's something poppy and dancey. You know, it changes. So who the three people are over the course of time and history, but I'm just not prepared to give it that much thought. All I know is, like, I can see it. It's like a picture in my brain. You know the way some people see numbers as colours and they can add up stuff? You know, this is the way it is in my head. I can see it, absolutely. And not only is he in the top four, top three, maybe top three, maybe he's number one now. I see how quickly things change. Not only am I including everybody that ever lived on Earth, I'm including fictional characters as well. People that have been in films and books and songs and TV shows and podcasts, which are dedicated to making up fictional characters who are the most reprehensible people that you can ever think of, who do the worst things imaginable. He's right up there with all of those, and he is, I'm going to say it now. I'm going to say it right now. He's worse than Phil Collins. That's what we're dealing with this weekend. So I don't want the variety of having to discuss something against Chelsea that didn't work out. I'm just not interested in that at all. I want, like, well, that was great fun. Fuck you, Chelsea. Fuck you, Mourinho. And of course, John Terry. And also Phil Collins, even though he's not a Chelsea fan, I want to make sure I don't mention his name again, because if you say it three times, he appears. He's like a really annoying, small, bald, Motown song-destroying Candyman. So I won't mention his name again. So that's what we're up against this weekend, people. Going into it on a great run of form and everything else. So we'll touch on that game and team news and all those kind of things. But from an Arsenal point of view, it's been a very, very, very quiet week. And that's good. That is good. Elsewhere, though, I have discovered that the Andrew Mangan who lives in America, whichever guy this is, I think he's the guy in Colorado, has signed me up for something. Well, it's like a campaign group, because I got an email which said, Andrew, John Oliver was right. Now, I happen to like John Oliver a lot. He's really very good at what he does on that new TV show of his called Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. That's how you know it's got John Oliver in it. And he was brilliant on The Daily Show. I'll set aside the fact that he is, unfortunately, a Liverpool fan. Bit of a mug smasher there is John, but he's great. A really entertaining guy and very funny and very clever. And that recent interview with Edward Snowden was fantastic. And I got this email saying John Oliver was right. I was thinking, wow, what, about what in particular? But then I've been signed up for this thing called Demand Progress. So that's what it is. I was going, what the hell is Demand Progress? And why are they asking me for $5? I don't have $5. I don't have any dollars at all. All my currency is in euro. And I've got some krona left over from when I was in Oslo last week. But I went to look at their website to see what kind of shenanigans I'm expected to get involved in. And, well, you know, block the Comcast Time Warner takeover. Eh, what do I care about that? Or maybe I should. I just don't know. But Comcast and Time Warner are not entities that we have to deal with here in Ireland. Their next campaign is protect net neutrality and the open internet. I'm all for that. Good on you. Good stuff. End unconstitutional mass surveillance. That's another one. And look, I think we should all be behind that. Everything we're doing and saying and texting and WhatsApping and Facebook Messengering and Snapchatting and everything else is being collected. Imagine if at some time in the future the world ends, or, you know, humanity as a species is wiped out and a new species emerges, or, I don't know, aliens come down to Earth and they find these data stores, these great big data centers which contain all the emails and all the Facebook messages and everything else that we've got. And they'd look at this and go, how did these people, no wonder they're all dead. No wonder. So I think, even for the sake of our history, our place in the history books, we should end unconstitutional mass surveillance. What about constitutional mass surveillance, though? Are they saying that all mass surveillance is unconstitutional, or do they only want an end to the unconstitutional mass surveillance? I'm a little confused. I could click on the thing and, you know, look at it, I suppose, but that seems like an awful lot of hassle, you know. And the other one is release the torture report now. So, apparently 2 million people are demanding progress, and I am one of them, thanks to my name doppelganger in the United States of America, who signed me up for this thing. Does he ever sign up for stuff and wonder, like, why don't I ever get the emails that I sign up for? I applied for all these jobs, and they never, ever get back to me. He must be, like, really confused about how email works. Because surely nothing ever gets to him. I hadn't thought about that. Do you think he sits there going, well, why can't I get these emails? Why is it when I give my email to something, it just never arrives? Does nobody like me? Do I even exist? Maybe I'm a construct of somebody's imagination. Maybe that's why. I email, therefore I am. But he emails and he amn't. He amn't anything, because I am. Maybe I'm really him. It's all getting a bit confusing, I have to say. And demand progress, I'm not giving you $5. You know, I'm confused by your motives and everything else, so you should be clearer in the emails that I didn't sign up for. But, you know, you do like John Oliver, so maybe I think I've got some quarters left over from my last visit, so I'll sellotape a couple of quarters to a postcard and send that to you. And then maybe I should try find that other guy and see what his life is like. God, imagine getting him on the podcast. That'd be really dull. Anyway, right, okay. Chelsea this weekend, we're going to look ahead at that in a while. But with me now to discuss various things, not only the FA Cup semi-final, but also Olivier Giroud. I'm delighted to welcome back to the show from France 24. It's our friend Dan Levy. Hi, Dan.
Hello.
Right. Well, look, let's start very quickly on another FA Cup final on the horizon for Arsenal. We touched on this game mostly in the Arscast Extra on Monday, but still something to really look forward to and to kind of focus the minds between now and the end of the season. I mean, I guess in a way they have to put it to one side, but it's still a nice thing to look forward to at the end of May.
I think it's fantastic. It's a fantastic thing for the fans to look forward to at the end of May, as well as, of course, the players and the manager as well. I was at the game last year. I was lucky enough to be there, and I thought it was amazing. Like, it really was something that I'd you know, always wanted Arsenal to do was to get back to winning the FA Cup. We have such a great history in it. We're now will have been in more finals than any other team.
Yeah.
Nobody has won it more than us. And Wenger's, I think, quite close to equaling the record for the most wins for any manager ever. I think he will if he gets this one. It'll be his sixth, won't it? So
yeah.
He has a great history in the Cup. There was that series from, was it the year 2001 to 2005? We're in the final pretty much every year apart from that semi-final in 2004 when we probably should have been there ahead of Man United. And, you know, I think that it, despite the fact that some people think it may have lost a little bit of status, it's still a great competition. And the only thing about this particular final is kind of the Sherwood factor, the Sherwoodiness of it. I just feel like there might be a, even though he is a kind of hashtag top gooner, it might not be Agent Tim for us in this final. He's probably going to really use that to get his players up for it. And he's going to be very good at, I think, whatever you like to say about how good a manager is, very good at getting his players up for that final in the role of underdog. So who knows? But I'd rather play them. Yeah, I'd rather play, even with the Sherwood factor, I'd rather play them than Liverpool, I think, who still have some really dangerous players.
I like that, the Sherwoodiness. I mean, nobody really knows quite how good he is or isn't. Because he had a very short spell, obviously, at Tottenham before they let him go. And he has come in and done very good things for Aston Villa. But then I suppose the state that Villa were in, there was really only one way it could go. And there is often that effect, isn't there, where a new manager comes in, the players feel a bit liberated, a bit freed. He gives them, some self-belief, some confidence. He does strike you as that kind of a guy, you know, who'd talk Definitely. You into a good state of mind, unlike Lambert, who was perhaps a bit more dour.
And I think in a way, it's not just because he's kind of cynically decided that that is the best thing to tell you. I think he really just believes all that stuff himself.
Mm.
And I think that actually does make him very endearing to a lot of people, even though for us, he was, he's a former Tottenham manager. I think he's really going to get the best out of Benteke. It's already starting to happen. He obviously, had that very dangerous attacking kind of triumvirate of Grealish and Delph and Benteke against Liverpool, which was really effective. And I do think it'll be dangerous for us as well. And we won't have as well kind of, the kind of Agent Colo factor that we had against Liverpool, where I thought in that 4-1 win he was really helpful. I think that actually they have some quite good players in defence. Vlaar, who's third in the World Cup, and they're a pretty well set up team. I just wonder if whether, you still think we're going to be favourites. And I think this time around, this Arsenal team is much better equipped to deal with that, much better than the side in 2011 when we lost in the League Cup final in that awful fashion at the end of the game. And I think even better than the side last year, who struggled against Wigan in that semi and then struggled against Hull in the final, even though we did get it done in the end.
Yeah.
I think we're in a much better place now.
There is, of course, the possibility of Agent Senderos doing his work.
Yes, of course. I've forgotten about him.
Yeah, so I don't know how often he's playing or why he's not playing or whether he's injured or anything else. But
we'll have to get him in the team.
Yeah, for sure. We'll see if we can get someone to have a quiet word.
Yeah.
All right, well, look, FA Cup is something to look forward to in a while, and there's a big game coming up this weekend, which we'll touch on in a few minutes' time. But I wanted to talk to you a little bit about Olivier Giroud, and he's been talking to the French media over the last week or 10 days and had some quite interesting things to say about his career and the way it's progressed.
Yeah, he was the guest on beIN Sports on their Sunday night show about a couple of weeks ago, and he was just really interesting because, he's a very open guy, and they did all these kind of features with him, and they went and spoke to his former coaches, and they dug out all his former haircuts and put them onto a nice tableau and stuff like that. He we knew that he's sort of incredibly likable guy, and all his former teammates were saying, kind of how nice he is. And the former PR guy at Montpellier, where they won the title, said, he's the kind of guy that you often see players who get better, improve, and start to, really kind of get a big head. And actually with Giroud, it wasn't like that at all. He stayed exactly the same. He was an absolute pleasure to deal with all the way through, even when he was the star striker. He scored 21 goals in the league that season. They won the title. But it was almost that he was too nice. That was the kind of thing that came through. And it was something that Giroud said himself. He had this guy called Max Malti, who was basically somebody he worked under at Grenoble, and then he took him to Tours when he went there in Ligue 2. And he just said, look, he's a great guy, but sometimes we wanted him to be a bit more aggressive on the pitch. And the way he kind of put it was, he was this kind of, he's this beautiful, like, pedigree cat, thoroughbred. And we actually wanted him to be a bit of a kind of wily alley cat,
a bit more kind of feral.
Aggressive guy. Yeah, a bit more feral, exactly. We kind of rough up his fur and And I think that that's something that Giroud has been working on himself. And he actually said, I thought the most interesting part of what he said was that, you know, he said, the thing I personally have to work on is that, you know, when I was young, people said I was a bit nonchalant and I wasn't quite aggressive enough. And I think with Giroud, you know, you can tell that he's a good guy. He's got his feet on the ground. And I don't think that nonchalance comes from a position of kind of haughtiness or arrogance. I don't think he sort of thinks, well, look, I'm too good for this. I'm not going to try. I think there's almost a kind of shyness to him on the field, you know, a slight inferiority complex. You know, he was playing in Ligue 2 well into his early 20s. And he said it himself, the thing I have to work on is pushing myself and kind of getting out of my comfort zone. And it was quite interesting. He used the word comfort. And that just really made me think about the spell he had out of the team at the start of the season and the effect it may have had on him now. You know, he said, you know, you really have to be able to focus properly. And I talk about that with Arsene Wenger, and it has improved for me in England, you know, being not just physically ready for every game, but also mentally ready, you know, being really single-minded on the pitch. And I think he must have looked at that time out and saw and seen Danny Welbeck playing in his position for 3 months. And we said, you know, maybe physically he was refreshed and even mentally and perhaps tactically refreshed. But I think perhaps it also, that period out when he was sitting on the sidelines watching somebody else play in his position, because that wasn't the case the season before. He was the undisputed number one.
Yeah.
There was no one to challenge him at all, even though Sonogo played ahead of him at times. There was no challenge to him.
Yeah.
And I think that perhaps really helped to recalibrate his attitude. And he sort of thought, you know what, I really have to give everything I've got when I'm going into these games and really take the chances that come to me and be a bit more aggressive, be a bit nastier.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I think there are a couple of things that strike me. One is that when you talk about him being a nice guy, perhaps there's that expectation that other people are going to be nice guys as well. And he's found himself buffeted around by central defenders, and he's not getting free kicks that he thinks he should get. And he's, you know, displayed that to referees. And referees, of course, you know, if they don't give you a free kick, that's it, done and dusted. But perhaps there was a sense of injustice on his part. But also, that side of things has been cut out. Like, he does seem more focused, and he's a really interesting player in that when you talk about him playing in Ligue 2 into his early 20s, to be where he is now in terms of the progression that he's made, he seems to be a guy who's getting better every season. And I think that's true even from the 2.5-3 seasons that he's been at Arsenal.
Definitely.
He's better this season than he was last season, and last season he was better than he was in his first season.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of geeked out and looked at the numbers, and actually there's a very clear improvement every time he moves club. You know, at Tours, he was sort of on goals per game, he was on about 0.3 in the first season, and then over 0.5 in the second one. The same thing exactly when he went to Montpellier, 0.32, and then it was up to 0.58. And then at Arsenal, obviously, he's done very similar, 0.36, then 0.43. And then this season, he's up at, you know, kind of 0.62 goals per game. And then you add in all the assists as well. And what I think as well is quite interesting about what you were just saying is that he specifically said that he'd been told by the Arsenal coaching staff that he was too demonstrative, that he was kind of giving too much away emotionally when he was missing chances and stuff like that. And it made me think of this thing. It was Rio Ferdinand, wasn't it? He brought out a book and he said this thing about Dennis Bergkamp, and that he went up to Bergkamp and he said, hey, you know, do you reckon we could swap shirts at the end of the game? And Bergkamp just said, I don't swap shirts. just kind of left it. And he said, you know, that's what the great players were like. They were just cold on the pitch. They would just blank you. And Giroud, I mean, maybe some people don't think it's important. I'm quite glad that he's a great guy off the pitch. Now, that is important to me. I like that Arsenal players are kind of, you know, quite good guys. But on the pitch, you do want them to be, you know, maybe nasty isn't the right word, but you want them to just do what they need to do to win.
Yeah, a bit more cynical at times.
Yeah, cynical is the right word, exactly. You want them to be cynical and kind of professional and pragmatic. And I think that perhaps that's what's been missing. But what's clear is that he does work on it, and he's humble enough and smart enough to know, you know, how to improve. That's another thing that they were saying about him, the guys who worked with him was young, is that he didn't have to play football. He was smart, you know, he had qualifications, he could have done something else. Obviously he's going to probably make a lot more money playing football, but they were like he perhaps didn't see football as the be-all and end-all for himself because he was interested in other things.
How much of the progression as well can we put down, obviously, to him and the way that he works, and you've got to take your hat off to that, but also, number one, having better players around him, because he's now working with, for example, Alexis, Santi Cazorla, Mesut Ozil, whereas in his first season, that wasn't necessarily the same calibre of player around him. And secondly, being pushed by the presence of those players to be a better player himself.
I think it's probably a bit more of the latter, just because if you look at the, you know, the chance conversion rate he has, he is scoring more of those chances, and it's not perhaps just because, you know, for example, if you compare it to earlier in his career when he was playing at a lower level, it's not just about the fact that, you know, it's he's getting better quality balls because he's facing better defenders and better goalkeepers. So, and there's more pressure. So in theory, it would be more difficult to convert those chances. So I think, you know, a lot of credit has to go to him, and the fact that I think just mentally he has gone up a level. What is he, 28 now? Yeah, he's 25, I think. 29, rather, at the end of the season. So he's probably just at the right time, and he's maturing in the right way. And, he, you know, he's a guy that all of the French players seem to like as well in the national team. They just say, look, he's a great guy, and they always talk about, you know, oh, he's so good looking, ha, oh, isn't that funny? but also he's just not a dick. He's a really down to earth guy who is popular, and I think he doesn't have that kind of you know, what really struck me about this thing about, he talks about going to Clairefontaine at the age of 15, and they did this like training session for the strikers with Jean-Pierre Papin, and he was like, actually, you know, I kind of was a bit transparent there. I didn't really impose myself. I was a bit shy, and I was one of the only guys who came from Ligue 2. And, you know, when he was young, they were saying, you know, he wasn't really there. And as I said, like, I don't think that's because he was arrogant about his ability. I think he wasn't applying himself, perhaps because he was just a bit nervous and probably thought, you know, I'm not as good as these guys. I'm probably going to fail. He doesn't have that kind of inveterate self-confidence of a Nicholas Bentner. he probably has the much better contrasting balance of being quite humble, and you know, having a desire to work, but perhaps just needed to gain a bit more of that just belief that, like, I'm going to score the chances.
How is he viewed in France as, you know, as a club player and an international player? Because at international level, he's competing more or less with Karim Benzema for his place in the side, and Benzema obviously is, you know, hugely established at Real Madrid. You know, is there a feeling that Giroud is catching him up, or, you know, is he a popular player among the fans of Les Bleus?
He is popular. He's seen as the second striker to Benzema, and there's no doubt about that. There was a time when Benzema went on a really, really long barren run without scoring. It was a couple of years ago, and he hadn't scored. It was something ridiculous, like in 1,000 minutes or something for France. And then Giroud was starting at one or two games ahead of him. It was approaching the World Cup, and people were saying, wow, is Giroud going to be the starting striker at the World Cup? And I remember sort of thinking that would be weird, because we always want Benzema to kind of replace Giroud. At the time, that's what a lot of people were saying about Arsenal. And actually, he's going to be playing ahead of him for France. But once Benzema got a couple of goals again, it was clear that he was the starting man. And I thought, you know, you saw that last night with Real Madrid against Atletico. You know, the difference between Benzema and Chicharito.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
Shopify.com/arsblog.
I mean, Benzema really is a top class forward. And but there was something quite interesting I thought about that, what happened with Chicharito last night as well, because he missed so, I don't know if you saw the game, but he missed so many chances.
Yeah.
He scores that one at the end, which is basically a tap-in after Ronaldo set him up. And he goes off celebrating like, you know, Alain Zaghi, like a madman, because he's won them the game. And I think that's perhaps almost what Giroud was missing, that sense of like, oh, well, I've missed this chance now, but do you know what? I'll score the next one. It doesn't matter. All that has to happen is that I score the winner.
Yeah.
I don't care if I miss the other seven or the other six. But Giroud would sort of be like, you know, he kind of throwing his hands in the air and, you know, he'd look too histrionic. And I think that gave too much of an edge to the defenders.
Yeah.
They were saying, look, this guy's panicking. And I think what he's managed to get a better handle on now is, firstly, he's more confident, but secondly, he's probably deliberately been a bit cooler and given away a bit less on the pitch.
Kind of strange comments actually from Thierry Henry, weren't they, in relation to that goal?
I didn't hear it. I saw somebody reference it on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, I think he was just sort of saying pretty much what you said, like he's run off there celebrating like a madman, and you know, he was trying to, I think, in a fairly ham-fisted way, play up the contribution of Cristiano Ronaldo, who did a lot to set up the goal. You know, bearing in mind, of course, that Ronaldo is the kind of guy who would celebrate scoring a last-minute penalty in a 4-0 win as if he had won the World
Cup himself. With
nudity. With nudity and that horrendous neck of his. And, you know, it's a terrible thing. But, you know, if you can't celebrate like crazy at the end of a Champions League quarterfinal in which you score the goal, I mean, look, Thierry's had his celebratory moments when you think about games against Tottenham in the past, you know, running the length of the pitch, etc., etc. So
the thing is, Henri was somebody who is so sort of self-aware, almost in such a calculating way, that I think he, unlike a guy like Chicharito and Zaghi, probably doesn't get lost in the moment of a goal celebration like that. He kind of always is in control of his image and how he's going to appear. So I suppose he's probably just not quite the right person to, you know, to kind of see it from Chicharito's point of view. He is capable of choreographing his celebration to a goal like that, even on that sort of, you know, impulsive,
because
I don't think most players are.
Yeah, all right. Well, look, let's leave Giroud to one side then and look ahead. If we have to, you know, it's a very pleasant subject to look at, but we're an audio medium here, so people aren't getting the full benefit of it. And this weekend then, a game against Chelsea. I don't think there's any doubt where the title is going, but it would be nice if we could delay the party for Jose Mourinho and his team of miscreants and reprobates. this is hopefully 13th time lucky for Arsene Wenger.
It's funny because I always used to call the Arsenal team Arsene Wenger's band of travelling lovely young men, you know, just because they are. You have the opposite, don't we? You have this sort of nice team since we kind of lost the Vieiras and the Keowns. I think that, you know, they're, it's weird. You do sort of do feel quite confident going into this match, perhaps dangerously so. I mean, you look at the numbers and we are on this amazing run. There was a thing on Arsenal.com on Wednesday evening about, you know, the longest winning runs that Arsenal have been on. And I think there have only been five longer than this one. And four of them have been part of a title win, you know.
Right.
So it gives you an idea of how good a run we're on, historically speaking. And, you know, I think that if we can carry that on on Sunday, it's going to go a long way to not winning the title this time around, but putting us in a very strong position for next season. And we're on such an amazing run of form since the United defeat. It's 24 wins in 29, and I think since Spurs it's 12 wins in 13, and it's 11 in a row in domestic competition.
It's
title winning form.
It is, but, you know, if you don't have a terrible start to the season, obviously.
Yeah.
But, you know, going into this game, normally when you go in, there's a sort of a resignation about, well, we're playing Chelsea and this is not going to go the way that we want it to go. I think the win at Stamford Bridge, or the defeat at Stamford Bridge, rather, was showed signs of what was to come, perhaps, from Arsenal, even though it was 2-0. We did have some chances that day, and I don't think it was any way as conclusive and convincing as some of the other victories. This time around, though, going to face them, having beaten Manchester United, having beaten Manchester City, having thrashed Liverpool, you know, ticking all of the boxes that people wanted ticked in the second half of the season, and this is the biggest box of them all. So we're in good shape to go into this fixture in terms of our form, in terms of their form. You know, it's set up for Arsenal to have a really good chance of winning this one.
I do totally agree, although Chelsea, despite the fact that they're not quite winning games the way they were, and they haven't quite been as strong since January as they were in the first part of the season, they're unbeaten since that defeat against Bradford City in the FA Cup. So I still think actually beating them is quite a tall order for us. But I think the key, we say this very often, is probably going to be scoring first, because we never do against them in these games. We always sort of dominate for 15, 20 minutes, or, and that 6-0, it was about 1 minute, wasn't it? But, you know, then we kind of concede, and then it kind of falls apart. I don't think this team will fall apart the same way. It didn't happen in the game in the first half of the season. You know, the difference there really was Eden Hazard, because that run was amazing and it just opened up. They won a penalty and that trying to kind of change the game. And then, you know, we kind of lost concentration for a moment and Fabregas put Costa in. But I think scoring early is going to be key. In our run, rather, of 8 Premier League wins in a row that we're on now, we've led at half time in 7 of them.
Yeah.
And I think that shows you how important it is for us to do that. Mm. And I think doing it against Chelsea could really be the difference this time around.
Yeah, I mean, perhaps at the weekend against Reading, or last weekend, there was a little bit of disappointment with the performance itself. I mean, how much do you think the occasion played a part in that? Because when you beat Liverpool 4-1 and then you go and you play Reading and you struggle to beat them and it takes a bit of a mistake from the goalkeeper, does that knock the confidence, or you know, does that become compartmentalized almost straight away? Look, you know, we did what we had to do. The job was getting to the final. That's what we did. Let's pick it up now against Chelsea.
I would imagine that it depends quite a lot on, you know, the kind of very differing psychology of all the players. Like, without trying to sound sort of too psychological about it, I would imagine that it really depends on the person and how they interact with each other as a group, and perhaps the manager as well. But Wenger always says that, you know, winning the previous game is 70% of winning the next game.
Yeah.
And I think that is just about the result to a large degree. You know, I think if teams play well and lose, it's probably still quite hard to get them to feel confident about winning their next match, unless they really are an amazing side or completely confident in their own ability. You know, Wenger talked ahead of this Chelsea game about the fact that they've kind of ticked a few of those boxes, you know, going to Manchester and winning twice at City, at United. And I've been quite heartened by the fact that so many Arsenal fans and bloggers have been talking quite positively about the defeat against Chelsea earlier in the season. Maybe it's easy to after the 6-0, but, you know, yeah. I think it was part of this improving performance and dynamic in the big games. And I don't want to put too much pressure on it, because in a way I think we'll probably draw. But, you know, I think if we do win, it doesn't mean we're going to win the title, and it doesn't mean we're going to win the title next season, but it will, I think, really do a lot for the confidence of these players. And I think, you know, the game in the semi-final, to answer your question more directly, it was a big occasion, and I watched it back and we weren't that bad, I think. You know, we hit the woodwork 3 times and, you know, had a lot of chances, and we weren't in that much danger.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's Reading playing for giving it their all in at Wembley in the semi-final. Like, of course it's going to be tough. You're not going to win that 5-0.
Mm, yeah,
so
true.
I think that they'll just think, yeah, we're in the final, who cares?
Mm. The elephant in the room, the Catalan elephant, as it were.
Don't know what you're talking about.
Arsene Wenger, as he always does, says, you know, he'd like for Cesc Fabregas to be respected the way he deserves to be, which of course is quite open-ended when you step back.
Does that mean people throwing their own feces at him?
I don't know if it's going to go that far.
I hope not, but that's how some people might see it.
Yeah, well, look, this is not a call to...
Definitely don't do that, everybody.
Yeah, please don't. You know, you're only going to get some under your fingernails and...
You'd have to wash your hands, it'd be gross, it'd smell.
Yeah, it's a killer to get out. Anyway, the point is that there is going to be a reception for him, because as much as some people will look back and say, well, he was a great player for us in that period, he did leave, he went to Barcelona. I don't think anybody really begrudged him a move to Barcelona, but when you come back... And I think we all know the dynamics of football, and sometimes things don't work out the way you want to. He's at Chelsea now, and of course everybody hates Chelsea, and that by association means that he's going to get some stick, I think.
Yeah, the mistake was going to Chelsea, because obviously nobody likes them, because they're horrible.
Yeah, but absolutely, they're wankers.
But I think that, you know, the Fabregas thing is a bit worrying, I think, because people have made it quite a lot about how he dips in the second half of the season. I think that's a little bit of a myth, actually. I know that there are some statistics that back it up, but, you know, those statistics tended to conveniently leave out the fact that he didn't really do that at Arsenal, And there was a season there at Barca where that didn't really happen, and that was left out. And I think actually, you know, he's just super dangerous because he's bloody brilliant. And I was a really big advocate of bringing him back over the summer. I always on the proviso that we don't really know what happened and we don't really know what the relationship between him and Arsene Wenger was like.
Yeah.
But I still think he's probably the best midfielder in the league. I know people are going to say, well, Ozil's in form now and da-da-da. And Ozil is amazing. I'm a huge fan. And I was from the Werder Bremen days. But Fabregas, when he's on song, can do everything, really. And I think what's slightly mitigated the fact that we didn't bring Fabregas back is how good Cazorla's been. And how good Cazorla's been in that deeper midfield position, which I didn't expect.
Yeah.
You know, and in terms of his assist numbers, like assists per minute and stuff like that, you know, and key passes and stuff, he's very close to Fabregas, you know. So he's been amazing. But I don't know, Fabregas did get that goal the other week against QPR, and I think that what I found quite funny about that was that he ripped his mask off as he went to celebrate, and I just imagine him saying, "It's me, Cesc Fabregas, it was me all along." And they're like, well, it on your shirt, Fabregas, we knew it was you.
I mean, Mesut Ozil has been in great form, and obviously part of the reason Arsene Wenger didn't go back for Fabregas was because he'd spent £42.5 million on a player who, you know, can do many of the same things, but obviously does them in a different way. There's a bit more elegance, you might say, to the way that Ozil plays. I don't know if anybody is still unconvinced by his quality, but a big showing on Sunday, making a decisive impact, would certainly go a long way to quelling pretty much all the doubts.
I mean, he's a much more elegant player than Fabregas,
but
he has at least a bit less ostensible drive. And I do agree that part of the criticism was actually just related to his body language. I think if he'd looked like he was running around the pitch snarling, people would have criticised him less in the slightly more fallow period he had earlier in the season. But also, I think Fabregas, for us at least, at Arsenal, at that time, did drag us through games, did win us games on his own.
Yeah.
And Ozil doesn't really do that. But then he probably doesn't really need to do that. And I think part of that is because we have Sanchez now to do all of the running around and snarling and inspiring people with the way he plays. And that means that you can almost take a bit of the focus off Ozil and allow him just to create goals, which is what he does best. And if he can do that on Sunday, it'd be great. I think the key would be, as I said, doing it earlier in the match.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's hope it's an early assist from Ozil to Giroud, who celebrates by smearing something on John Terry. I think that will work for me.
You're okay as long as it's John Terry.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Or any of them, actually. I'm not that picky. Just someone, you know. All right, Dan, thank you as always, and we'll chat to you again soon.
Pleasure.
Thank you to Dan. You can find him on Twitter at DanLevy1. At DanLevy1. We're going to look ahead to the Chelsea game this weekend against Chelsea. The Chelsea game against Chelsea, in which we play Chelsea against Chelsea, where we face Chelsea in a Premier League game against Chelsea. And that's coming up on Sunday. We'll have some team news in a little bit, but now it's a Maori Bischoff PI. I was sitting there trying to remember why my marriage to Sherilyn Finn fell apart when the guy walked in. "Hang on, mister," I said, "I'm trying to remember something." Then I remembered I was never married to her. In fact, I've never been married at all. "What do you want, mister?" I said. "I'm worried," he said. "Oh, yeah," I said, "about what?" "Well," he said, I gotta go back and see my ex." "Oh, yeah," I said, "what do I care?" "Well," he said, "it didn't end particularly well." "What do you want me to do about that, mister?" I said. "Well, I was kinda hoping you'd go over there and smooth things out a bit," he said. "I'm not sure I'm gonna do that, mister," I said. I recognize you now." "Oh yeah," he said. "You better believe it," I said. I reached down into my desk and pulled out a black and white woodland animal, and I shoved it in his face. "What the hell are you doing, mister?" he said. "I heard you like to kiss badgers," I said. "Kiss the badger. Go on, kiss it. Kiss the fucking badger. You better kiss this badger right now. With tongue. Do it. Yeah, you like that, don't you?" We will have more from Amari Bischoff PI at some point in the very near future. Now, we're going to look ahead to the Chelsea game, which obviously is taking place on Sunday. And there was something I wanted to talk about before that, and I should have written it down because now I can't remember what it is. No, wasn't that? No, I don't know what it is. So I'm just going to have to go straight into the team news. There's a doubt over Per Mertesacker. He's not trained all week, apparently, because of the ankle injury that he sustained in a challenge during the Reading win last weekend at Wembley, so he may not be fit. That would mean Gabriel starting alongside Laurent Koscielny. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain remains out with his groin strain. Mikel Arteta is back in full training, but probably a little bit short of match fitness to be considered for this one, so it'll be interesting to see what the manager does in terms of his team, particularly as we're facing Chelsea, who are, they're not top of the league for no reason. You know, they're a very good side and they have some very good players. Maybe it's just me being overly cynical, but I'm not sure I buy any of this stuff about how they might not have any fit strikers. Costa's been off with a hamstring strain and Remy's been injured and Drogba's got an ankle injury and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, they can work their laboratory magic and get one or two of them fit. So I expect that to happen. So how we set up then will be interesting. I think Mathieu Debuchy will play it right back. The minutes that he got at Wembley will be good for him. Get those under his belt and hopefully he'll be a little bit sharper, particularly if he's going to have to deal with a player like Eden Hazard. Who plays on the right-hand side? What's he going to do? Will he keep Aaron Ramsey there? Will he move Ramsey back into a more central position, put Alexis out there? No, I don't know that he's going to do an awful lot with the shape of the team, but you have to say perhaps against Reading, that formation didn't quite work the way we might have wanted it. It worked very well against Liverpool, though, at home, and we are at home, so maybe that will be the thing. And look, it's Chelsea. We haven't beaten them in quite a while. This will be the 13th attempt for Arsene Wenger to try and beat Jose Mourinho. I mean, it's not like he's lost every single one of those games, but the record is not good, and that is certainly going to be a monkey that he wants to get off his back. And look, let's face it, it's about time. It's about time. We've got some very interesting Chelsea team news as well. News is they are all cunts, every single one of them, to varying degrees, of course, and managed by the most evil person in history. I've decided he's number one right at this moment while I'm thinking about him in his face. He's number one. And then, of course, there is the return of Cesc Fabregas. Played for us for many seasons. Was a fantastic player. And as many of you will know, I've got a big soft spot for Cesc. He's going to get the boos, though. That's what happens when you go and play for Chelsea. You get the boos because, you know, you're guilty by association. Simple as that. Regardless of what you did in the past, and I've got all the respect in the world for most of that. You play for Chelsea, you expect to get the Chelsea player treatment, and he will be expecting that, of course. He's a professional footballer, he knows how it's going to go down. A lot of it is pantomime stuff, it'll add to the atmosphere. What's already going to be a fairly contentious atmosphere. When we played at Stamford Bridge, you might remember the two managers came together with like a clash of rutting stags, except one of the stags was terrified of a 64-year-old man. You know, the kind of sneaky little stag, that fella? He wasn't up for it, was he? Not at all. He was like, don't, Arsene, please. So he was like, you know, and you run through these pictures of what way would you like the manager to react if we score the winning goal? Like, do you want him to do a Mourinho and run and pump his fists or do a knee slide in front of the Chelsea dugout? You know, I would just like Arsene to walk calmly over to Mourinho, stick a finger up his nose and then just wipe it in his hair. But that's just me. You know, I'm petty like that. So let's hope that Mourinho's got snotty hair by 6 o'clock on Sunday evening. Let's keep this good run going. 3 points would be great. And we're going into this game against them in probably the best form that we've gone into a game against them in a long time, full of confidence. Players are playing well. So, you know, let's keep it going. Let's keep this good run that we're on going. So if you're going, have a great time. If you're not, you know, sit in the sofa, drink a beer. I'll be here on Monday with James. We'll have an Arsecast extra. We'll look back over whatever happens in the Chelsea game on Sunday against Chelsea when we play Chelsea in the Premier League in a Premier League clash against Chelsea at the Emirates against Chelsea. So That's just about it. So we'll have more on the Arscast Extra on Monday, and we'll look ahead to whatever the hell is happening next week in the Arscast Regular on Friday. So until then, have yourselves a great weekend. See some of you for, you know, stuff and things. And that's it. Until the next one, cheers. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.